So how do you teach the news in the classroom? That's the central question for a discussion tomorrow afternoon here at WNYC's The Green Space called Teach-In, How to Bring Tough Conversations into the Classroom. I'm joined now by the moderator, Peter Nelson. He's director of the New York Office of Facing History and Ourselves, a group that seeks to combat prejudice through education programs. And we'll let you guys in the audience weigh in, too. Welcome to the show, Peter Nelson.
Thank you, Brian. It's great to be here.
Tell us, first of all, for people who aren't familiar with your group, a little bit about Facing History and how you incorporate headlines into the classroom.
Certainly. I mean, Facing History has been around for a long time now, since 1976. We operate across the country in a few places internationally, and our goal is to support teachers in the classroom. I heard the last segment. They are a beleaguered group. They need all the support they can get. And I think they, with outsider support, can help focus on their students' needs. And that's one of the focuses for us, too. We bring them materials to use in the classroom. We do what's called teacher training, what we'll call professional development. And that way help them let the student voice come into the room alongside the text that students should be reading to make sure there's a conjunction between those two.
So let's give an example. This year, your organization worked with the WNYC program, Radio Rookies, that gets teens involved in radio reporting on their lives on various issues. And we're going to play a clip of one of their stories by Vincent Marrero about the police policy of stop and frisk.
It's hard for me to respect somebody that has me up against a wall, arms out, legs spread, and treats me like a criminal. But I've been raised in a family that served their country over generations. I even have a cousin that's a police officer, so I'm not going to give up on them because I know they can do better.
So, for example, how did you work with Radio Rookies, and how would you teach about the NYPD stop and frisk policy?
Sure. I mean, this Radio Rookies was a great partner. We did a three-month program with two different high schools in the city, and the students were given, through Radio Rookies' smart way of doing these kinds of things, the leeway and the control over how to try to get a story across. These were student-centered interest stories, and in this case, this young man, who's been deeply affected by the Trayvon Martin incident, really had a lot of ownership in the story that he wanted to look at. The interesting thing the listeners didn't get to hear is that he begins by saying that he has a lot of respect for the police, thinks their job is very difficult, and was even interviews someone, I think, in the beginning who says the police need to do their job and it actually makes us safer. But then he also represents the complicated nature of when he is suspicious merely for walking down the street, it doesn't make him feel good and he feels violated when they pat and frisk him.
Listeners, any teachers or former teachers in the audience right now who want to call up and talk about how you bring the news into your classrooms, how you have brought current events into your classroom? Do you have to avoid your own biases, you know, so that you're teaching various points of view, you're teaching context, rather than just teaching your opinion? 212-433-WNYC. Do any of you think that the headlines don't belong in the classroom? 212-433-9692 for Peter Nelson from Facing History. And Peter, what about that? I mean, maybe before we talk about how, though we're talking about it, we need to ask if. Do headlines belong in the classroom, and does it depend on the age group?
Well, they definitely belong in the classroom. Otherwise, we give the students a sense that what happens in school, and it was one of the debates we had even as we prepared for tomorrow's event, how do we not make the mistake of making a total disjunction between the classroom and real world? The classroom needs to be connected to the real world, or students are too smart not to realize, and then this is just an artificial space that has nothing to do with my lived life, and I'll jump through the hoops and I'll run over the hurdles just so I can get where you want me to get to, but then I'm going to go back to the real world and not use this properly. It's hard to do the headline, though, in the classroom because teachers are up against a lot of mandates to get students ready for these things called tests, and it's understandable, but it's regrettable.
Right. Right, but that's mostly in language arts and in math, maybe in social studies classes, which is where these things would tend to come up. There's a little bit more leeway. Does the Department of Education at the city level take a position on this, whether to bring the news into the classrooms or with guidelines on how?
I'm not sure of their official position, but actually with this new Common Core, there's a lot more leeway since it's very skill-centered, very literacy-centered for young people to be reading about what's happening in the news. That's an education and a way of unpacking information that could easily be used by classroom teachers to help them become more literate Americans.
Is there any time you think it's not appropriate?
Well, If it's a the biggest worry sometimes is the teacher has their own agenda for a political direction or a particular answer. It can also be inappropriate if it's something that's going to jumpstart a discussion in class that isn't a discussion, but instead of war against something or a tirade against something else. And this is one of the issues, actually, that this notion of student-centered learning sometimes brings up. Teachers are a little nervous about losing control of their class, mostly because they're trying to take students on a journey to point B. And if I take you on a detour as a student, if my voice is really valued, then the teacher does get a little anxious, say, whoa, 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 we got to get back to where we were going, which is a tragedy if it turns out that as a result you're missing something that's valuable to you in the world you live in.
Here's another example of a WNYC radio rookie who you worked with. This one is on the racial divide in Crown Heights.
We heard that the Jews are mean.
They're nasty.
They don't take showers.
They practice incest.
They cook only one time for the week.
They're all rich.
And they own everything in New York City.
People like the stereotype. And I think that when you don't know much about a community, then you make up things.
This is our U.S. history teacher, Miss Ali.
So when you don't know something, then you tend to create a lot of falsehoods.
Pretty good.
It's a great piece. Again, I beg the listeners to listen to this piece, both come and listen to the event tomorrow. But this piece is a beautifully nuanced piece that goes from a point that initially seems like these young people are accepting some assumptions about, in this case, the Lubavitcher community in Crown Heights. And then through the course of a fairly short piece, they have almost an educational journey, thanks to this wonderful teacher of theirs, thanks to another teacher that they didn't even know was Jewish in their own school. And then it goes through ups and downs. They meet with some Lubavitcher girls who they try to understand their cultural differences, but also say something that they're surprised by. In fact, if the viewers go to the comment board on this, there's some beautiful words from the Lubavitcher community answering back some of the things, answering back in honored ways. They're thrilled with the ways this piece has honored the community. And I think this is in keeping with what Facing History has always believed. Give students a chance to let their voice be heard, to have an investigation that at least is somewhat interest-based on their own part, and you'll see some amazing things come forward in their investigation and their learning.
Beth in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks so much for taking my call. I think this is such a great topic. I actually work as a teaching artist, which means primarily I work with drama, and I use drama in schools, in classrooms, to bring curriculum to life. And I'm also certified as a social studies teacher, as well as in theater. And some of the work that I've done, mostly with high school students, but actually would love to do with younger students as well, is something called newspaper theater, which is inspired by the work of Augusto Boal, who has written The Theater of the Oppressed, among other things. And the idea of newspaper theater, you know, similar to what you've been talking about with the work that Radio Rookies is doing, is to make a connection to the, you know, lives of the people who are creating it and to bring the news to life through drama activities, but also to look at the news really through a very critical lens and look at what is the story that the news is telling us, and then how can we then tell that story, you know, with our own experiences as well.
Thank you very much. Good example. Howard in Forest Hills, you're on WNYC. Hi, Howard.
Hi. I was a social studies teacher for 32 years in Northport, Long Island, and in this age of Fox News and where so many people get their information from limited points of view, I think about this issue a lot. And when I was teaching, there were two particular instances where I especially went out of my way. Well, one of them was prepared for me to expose my students to multiple viewpoints. One of them was using a prepared curriculum project, I think it came out of the UN Association, on the Suez Canal nationalization crisis of 1956.
Oh, boy.
And it already came with multiple articles and editorials from newspapers around the world. And so that the kids had the task of trying to figure out, because the newspapers were not labeled, you didn't know if this was an article from an American publication, perhaps the Daily News, or an Egyptian newspaper. But you know, they could figure it out. Uh-huh.
And Howard, it's a great example, and thank you. I'm going to leave it there just because our time is short, and I want to get on one parent who just called in who I think objects to how some news has been dealt with in the classroom. Ahmed in Woodside. You're on WNYC. Ahmed.
Hi, Brian. My experience with my son, Mohammed, was in Manhattan, Math and Science High School. It was a very mixed experience. He loves and hates his teacher, social studies teacher, for two reasons. One, he was engaging them, the students, with the current issues, politics and media and New York Times and so on, and he come back to discuss it with me because he knows me. I know the material very well, and go back to his teacher. But in the meantime, his teacher was really pushing his opinion too much bias. And
what'd you do? We're going to run out of time, but what did you do about it?
What I really was what I want to say is it was very good experience. It was impacted Mohammed to open his mind about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I would say for the teachers to be more not biased, right, but objective, because this is learning process, academia.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. We're going to run out of time very quickly. Peter Nelson from Facing History. Just briefly, what about when education and the schools themselves are such contentious topics? I remember reading about a social media campaign that some students had launched to try and save their high school from closure. You know, one of the schools Bloomberg was trying to close. Are school closures and the politics behind testing appropriate? Are they just too hot to handle because they're inside the system?
I mean, you know, our organization is called Facing History and Ourselves. The idea of facing, the idea that we move away from looking at things seriously is a shame. I loved what the last listener talked about, mostly because I love the idea that the child-age student was coming back and talking with his father about,
yes,
what was going on.
Absolutely.
I think when you have engaging things going on in the classroom as opposed to parents playing the role of dentists trying to extract truth out of their students' mouths, instead the students start bubbling with, this is what's going on. In this case, it wasn't a perfect story because the parent and the child were a little concerned about the over-directionality of the teacher, but the idea that they were buzzing about something in the classroom, I think, is what allows the news to be important.
And even though they thought the teacher was pushing his opinion too much, the father, as we heard from him, concluded that this was a positive experience that opened,
right,
his son's mind. So very good. Well, we will have to leave it there. Peter Nelson, director of the New York Office of Facing History and Ourselves, will moderate a workshop on this subject of bringing issues into the classroom, co-hosted by WNYC and the New York Times Joint School Book Project and by Facing History. This is tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 down here in the green space at WNYC. Admission is free, but reservations are required. See the link on our show page at WNYC.org or at thegreenspace.org.